If you've ever worked with wood or metal in a shop, you know that exact feeling of a vice grip.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you place your material in, you turn that crank, and the pressure just comes from both sides simultaneously.
Right. There's nowhere to go.
Nowhere to go, just get squeezed. And looking at the mid-August real estate data for you today, that is exactly what the macroeconomic environment is doing to commercial real estate right now.
It really is. The squeeze is on.
Yeah. So our mission for you today in this deep dive is to separate the absolute signal from the noise. We're zooming in specifically on retail, net lease properties, 1031 exchanges, and this just massive boom happening in the Texas market.
Which is fascinating right now.
It is. And because understanding this market requires highly localized expertise, this deep dive is brought to you by Eureka Business Group. They are the premier authority and commercial real estate broker specializing in retail in the Dallas-Fort Worth market. So if you are navigating DFW, they are the specialists you want in your corner to find the actual yield because it's tough out there.
It is tough. And that macroeconomic foundation we're looking at this week, it perfectly illustrates that vice grip you mentioned.
Yeah.
The pressure on the commercial real estate market is coming from two distinct directions. So from the top down, you've got borrowing costs, creating this heavy squeeze on investors.
Just brutal borrowing costs.
Exactly. For the week of August 14th, the 10-year Treasury closed at 4.68%,
Wow.
and the 30-year bond hit 5.34%.
Which is, I mean, that's high.
It is. And those are the benchmarks that dictate commercial mortgage rates.
Yeah.
So when those numbers stay elevated, the cost of financing a property purchase or even refinancing an existing loan, it
Wow.
just remains painfully high.
Right. So that's the top down. And from the bottom up, we have the consumer side of the equation weakening, which squeezes the tenants who actually pay the rent.
Yes.
Because the data shows U.S. retail sales fell 0.6% in July. And that is the first overall drop we've seen in 9 months. And compounding that, the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index, it dropped to 51.0.
That's a huge drop.
It really is. And this index measures how confident people feel about the economy and, you know, their personal finances. A score of 51 basically indicates severe exhaustion.
Yeah, consumers are just tired.
They're tired. So the cost of capital is punishingly expensive, and the consumers shopping at these commercial properties are aggressively pulling back their spending.
Right, which sets up this very complex dynamic for property valuations.
Right.
Because in a normal economic textbook scenario, you know, when interest rates rise significantly, property prices are supposed to fall.
Right. They go inversely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the metric the industry uses to track this is the capitalization rate, or cap rate.
Yep, right, yeah.
So for anyone reviewing their portfolio right now, the cap rate is simply the net operating income of a property divided by its current market value. It represents the annual return you'd expect if you bought the building in all cash. So because the income is usually spiked by a long-term lease, the only way a cap rate goes up is if the property's price goes down.
See, but I want to look closely at the mechanics of those cap rates
Yeah.
based on our sources, because this is where the market logic kind of seems to break to me.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if money is this expensive to borrow and consumers are this tired, cap rates should be soaring upward,
Right, they should be.
which means property values should be dropping like a stone. I mean, an investor getting squeezed by 5.5% interest rates cannot pay yesterday's premium prices for a property.
No, the math doesn't work.
It doesn't. Yet the Boulder Group just reported their Q2 numbers, and the overall single-tenant net lease cap rates, what they call STNL,
Yeah.
they ticked up just 2 basis points.
It's crazy.
They're sitting at 6.82%, and 2 basis points is microscopic.
Yeah, a basis point is 1/100 of 1%.
Right. So a 0.02% movement means pricing has essentially flatlined. It hasn't crashed at all. How is that possible?
Well, the lack of movement in that headline number comes down to a massive market bifurcation.
Yeah.
Like, we are witnessing a dramatic flight to quality.
Flight to quality. Okay.
Exactly. Investors are not abandoning the retail sector. They're abandoning mediocre retail.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. The premium properties, like the absolute best locations with the strongest tenants, they are holding their value incredibly well because institutional capital is aggressively competing for a very limited supply of safe assets.
So they're just fighting over the top tier.
Right. The market is effectively splitting in two. The highly selective top-tier product remains exceptionally expensive,
Yeah.
while the lower tier properties are either, well, they're not trading at all, or their values are plummeting behind the scenes.
Oh, I see.
And that's effectively pulling that average cap rate to a standstill.
Okay, that makes sense. Because the pressure from this macro environment is fundamentally altering consumer behavior too. Which means if you are looking at a property today, you have to look directly at tenant survival.
Absolutely. What are they selling?
Right. The vice grip is squeezing the middle class consumer so hard that it's dictating which retail tenants are expanding and which are actively dying.
Yes.
And this shift is creating what economists call the barbell economy.
Right, the barbell. And the mechanics of a barbell economy are pretty straightforward, but they're devastating to legacy retail.
How so?
Well, if you picture a physical weightlifting barbell,
sure.
All the heavy mass is concentrated on the two far ends,
right?
With nothing but a thin metal bar in the middle.
Yeah, just the skinny bar in the middle.
Exactly. And right now, discretionary and middle market stores, which are that middle of the bar, they're struggling terribly because the middle class consumer is directing all their capital toward basically just survival.
Just the basics, yeah.
Right. CoreSite is actually projecting roughly 7,900 store closures this year.
7,900. Wow.
Yeah. And a massive percentage of those closures are being led by drugstores like Walgreens and middle-tier discretionary brands.
Oh, I've seen that in the news. Walgreens closing a bunch of locations.
Yep. Drugstores in particular are burdened by massive front-end retail overhead, while their core profit driver, which is the pharmacy margins, those have been heavily compressed.
Okay. But when we look at the ends of that barbell, the data tells a completely different story.
Totally different.
Because one end represents affluent luxury, which is, you know, insulated from minor economic shocks.
Always.
But the other end, which is much larger, represents necessity and deep value. Hmm. Because CoreSite is projecting 5,500 store openings in 2026.
Yes.
And it's almost entirely driven by this value sector, like Dollar General and Aldi. They're rapidly expanding their footprints.
Oh, Aldi is everywhere now.
Right. And the off-price apparel sector is seeing explosive growth too, like TJX, the parent company of TJ Maxx and Marshalls. They just raised their annual profit forecast and announced plans for 4% store growth. And Ross Stores reported a massive 13% quarterly revenue bump.
Which is incredible in this economy.
Yeah.
But you know, the business model of an off-price retailer like Ross or TJX, it acts as a structural hedge against a struggling economy.
Oh, like built into their business model.
Exactly. They rely on opportunistic buying.
Yeah.
So they're purchasing excess inventory from traditional retailers who either overordered or just missed the consumer trends.
Right.
So when times get tough, traditional retailers struggle with inventory gluts. And that allows the off-price sector to acquire premium goods at steep discounts.
Oh, I see.
And then they pass those savings to a financially strained consumer. So when inflation bites, a massive demographic just shifts their shopping habits down market to these value centers.
Okay, so if I'm an investor looking at a rent roll today, this changes the entire underwriting process.
It really does.
Like, I shouldn't just look at the corporate credit rating on the lease. I need to scrutinize the actual merchandise being sold inside the box.
Exactly. What are they moving?
Right. A lease with a discount apparel store or a massive grocery chain is functionally a hedge against inflation.
Yeah.
Because grocery stores, quick service restaurants, value apparel, they provide daily or weekly necessities. They offer an affordable escape.
Mm-hmm.
And the data shows this is the exact defensive posture investor capital is taking right now.
It is, because necessity and value tenants are the only ones rapidly expanding right now. So they're fighting a brutal war for limited square footage.
Yeah, everybody wants the same spots.
Right. And looking at the national data, ground zero for that battle is the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Let's talk about DFW.
Yeah, DFW is a perfect microcosm of this structural real estate resilience. The tenant demand is heavily outstripping the supply of new construction.
Wow.
The local metrics show DFW retail vacancy sitting at a remarkably tight 5.1%.
5.1. And you know, just to put that 5.1% vacancy rate into perspective for the listener, that is essentially full occupancy.
Basically zero.
Yeah. When you account for frictional vacancy, which is, you know, spaces that are temporarily empty just because one tenant is moving out and another is moving in.
Right. Turnover.
Or spaces undergoing routine renovations. 5.1% means there is virtually zero viable empty space sitting on the market.
Nothing available.
Space is incredibly constrained. And as a direct result, rents are up 2.4% year over year, hitting an average of $25.47 per square foot.
Which is wild.
And despite the expensive debt environment, the trailing 12-month sales volume in DFW is $1.4 billion, trading at a 6.4% average cap rate.
Yeah, the specific transactions happening in DFW, they really reveal the depth of institutional confidence in this market.
Like what kind of transaction?
Well, J.L. Werf recently arranged a major transaction in Plano involving a 138,000-square-foot Kroger-anchored center. It's called Legacy Drive Village.
Okay.
The significant detail here is that an institutional investor was brought in as an equity partner. Yeah, and institutions, they have entire divisions of analysts modeling long-term demographic shifts. So when institutional capital decides to park millions of dollars into a 1990s vintage grocery-anchored center in Plano.
Yeah, that says something.
It does. It signals that established necessity-based retail in strong Sunbelt corridors is viewed as one of the safest asset classes available globally right now.
Wow. And we are seeing this aggressive expansion everywhere in the local reports. I mean, BJ's Wholesale is pushing a new footprint into Mesquite.
Mm-hmm.
Trader Joe's is developing a new site out in Wiley. Academy Sports is rapidly rolling out new massive bounces in Salina, Granbury, Fairview.
They're everywhere.
They really are.
Yeah.
And Tyler's just secured a 16,000-plus square foot lease at Firefly Park in Frisco.
Wow.
The tenant velocity in DFW is just relentless.
It is. But, you know, the challenge this creates for the private investor is finding an entry point.
Right. How do you get in?
Exactly. With vacancy at 5.1% and institutional funds buying up the Class A grocery centers in core suburbs like Plano, a private buyer will generally lose a bidding war against a Wall Street fund on a stabilized asset.
Yeah, you can't outbid Wall Street.
No. So this requires a shift in strategy toward finding hidden basis, which is exactly why navigating this market requires utilizing local specialists like Eureka Business Group.
Yeah, because finding that hidden basis means you don't overpay for a perfect, fully stabilized asset.
Right.
Instead, you buy a solid frame, but you swap out the engine.
You got it.
You look for older, exceptionally well-located neighborhood centers that have repositioning potential.
Yep.
Like, I'm looking at a prime example in the Bradford report this week regarding the Harwood Shopping Center in Bedford.
Oh, yeah, that's a great example.
They just signed Scooter's Bar and Grill to a 10-year lease right ahead of a planned major renovation of the center.
See, that is the textbook definition of engineering the yield rather than just buying it off the shelf.
Right.
Another clear example is Baybury Square in Richardson. Marcus and Millichap recently sold that property to a local developer.
Yeah.
It's an older 1960s asset, but the underlying land and location are phenomenal.
Oh, location is everything.
Always. The private buyer secures a higher yield by taking on specific leasing risks or managing a renovation project.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps they're repositioning empty junior box spaces in secondary corridors to attract those high-frequency fitness centers or quick-service restaurants that the barbell economy is demanding right now.
Right, right. But buying the frame and upgrading the engine, that requires capital. Which brings us to the mechanics of how these specific acquisitions are being funded.
Yes, the funding is key.
Because a massive driver of this transaction volume, particularly for private buyers in markets like Texas, is the 1031 tax-deferred exchange.
Oh, 1031s are huge right now. And the legislative environment for 1031 exchanges recently stabilized, which is highly relevant for active investors.
Yeah, people were worried about that.
They were. There had been significant anxiety regarding potential changes to the tax code. But Section 1031 remains fully intact after the passing of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act.
Right.
There are no new dollar caps and no new annual limits on deferrals. So that removes a substantial legislative overhang that had been causing hesitation in the investment community.
But, you know, while the tax code is safe, the mechanical rules of executing the exchange remain incredibly strict.
Very strict.
Which brings us to a Kiplinger article in our sources detailing what they call the 45-day trap.
Ah, yes, the trap.
Yeah, so if you sell an investment property, the IRS gives you exactly 45 days to formally identify a replacement property to successfully defer your capital gains taxes.
Right.
But because the premium product, those investment-grade long-term leases we just discussed, mm-hmm. because they make up less than 10% of the overall retail supply right now, finding a viable replacement asset is incredibly difficult. Investors are just racing a ticking clock to find a needle in a haystack.
Exactly. And that ticking clock creates a dangerous psychological dynamic.
Yeah.
The pressure of a massive tax penalty forces investors to make underwriting compromises they would immediately reject under normal market conditions.
Right. Because if we look closely at the math behind some of these trades, The fundamental logic of forcing a 1031 exchange right now seems deeply flawed.
It really does sometimes.
Our sources show data where a premium, brand new McDonald's ground lease might trade at a 4.45% cap rate.
Which is tiny.
Tiny. But as we established in the opening macro data, borrowing costs for commercial mortgages are sitting well over 5%.
Right.
So this creates a scenario known in the industry as negative leverage.
Yes. Negative leverage is a killer.
You are literally borrowing money from a bank at a higher interest rate than the yield the property is paying you back.
It's backwards.
Yeah. Every dollar of debt you place on that property actively destroys your cash-on-cash return. So if you're reviewing your portfolio, you have to ask, shouldn't you just pay the 20% capital gains tax rather than lock into negative leverage on a 20-year lease just to beat a 45-day clock? Right. Absolutely. And understanding the danger of negative leverage is a critical takeaway. Preserving a tax deferral is never a sufficient justification for purchasing a bad property or utilizing toxic financing.
Yeah.
You cannot buy based on headline brand names, and you cannot let the tax tail wag the investment dog.
Right. But to avoid that trap without just handing a massive check to the IRS, you have to look at how that market bifurcation provides alternative options.
There are options.
Because the market is completely split based on risk profiles. Yes, the ultra-safe McDonald's is trading at a 4.45% cap rate, but our sources also highlight a 31,000 square foot Ross in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
A store that has operated at that location for 40 years.
Wow, 40 years.
It just sold for $6.2 million at a 6.5% cap rate.
That's a huge difference.
And in a different tier, a massive open air center in Pennsylvania recently traded at an 8.5% cap rate. So there's sufficient yield available in the market to achieve positive leverage. But it requires accepting a different risk profile, usually involving older buildings, shorter lease terms, or secondary geographic markets.
Right. The strategic issue arises when an investor targets a higher yielding property, like that 6.5% cap rate, Ross, and the deal falls through on day 43 of their 45-day identification window.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Total nightmare. And the Kiplinger analysis strongly advises having Delaware statutory trusts, or DSTs, lined up as a mechanical backup plan.
DSTs?
Yes. A DST is a legally recognized trust where a sponsor acquires a massive institutional-grade asset, like an Amazon distribution center or a massive grocery complex.
Okay.
And they sell fractional beneficial interest to individual investors.
Gotcha. The mechanics of a DST are vital here.
Very.
Because you are buying a fractional interest in the trust, the IRS legally recognizes it as like-kind real estate for the purposes of a 1031 exchange.
Exactly.
You don't have to manage the property. You don't have to secure a mortgage yourself. And most importantly, you can execute the fractional purchase almost immediately.
That's the key.
Yeah, having a pre-vetted DST loaded in the chamber means if your primary target falls apart at the last minute, you don't have to make a desperate, poorly underwritten purchase on day 44 just to satisfy the IRS identification rules.
Right, and that structural backup is becoming increasingly necessary because private 1031 buyers are no longer just competing against each other.
No.
You're fighting major Wall Street institutions.
Wall Street is everywhere now.
The news this week confirmed that Goldman Sachs is acquiring LCN Capital Partners for up to $410 million.
Wow.
And LCN is a firm that specializes entirely in corporate sale leasebacks and net lease investing.
Oh, I see.
So when an entity with the capital depth of Goldman Sachs drops nearly $500 million just to acquire the infrastructure to buy more net lease properties,
yeah,
the competition for predictable, necessity-based cash flow is becoming permanent.
Yeah, they're not going away. But to justify fighting institutions for these properties and to justify valuations in a high interest rate environment, the physical utility of the retail space itself has to evolve.
Yeah.
The actual four walls and a roof are being utilized differently than they were a decade ago.
They have to be. The evolution of the physical space is driven directly by the logistics of e-commerce.
Oh, okay.
Like the dominant narrative for years was that e-commerce would cause a retail apocalypse,
right?
Wiping out physical stores.
Right. Everyone thought stores were dead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the current data proves the thesis was fundamentally incorrect. E-commerce did not kill physical retail. It forced the physical box to mutate its utility.
Okay, and the Walmart data in our stack is the perfect illustration of this mutation.
Yeah.
Because Walmart reported a massive 24% increase in their U.S. e-commerce sales. But the underlying mechanism is what matters. 70% of those digital online orders were fulfilled and shipped directly from their local physical retail stores,
Yes.
not from a centralized warehouse hundreds of miles away.
Right. The physical store has functionally become a micro-distribution center. The logistics of last-mile delivery are the most expensive component of any supply chain.
Mm-hmm.
You just cannot economically serve a digital customer with same-day or next-day delivery if your inventory is bottlenecked in a regional mega warehouse.
I look at modern big-box retail like a Trojan horse.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Right. Yeah. From the street view, it looks like a standard Target or Walmart. It's got a massive parking lot, shopping carts, automatic doors.
Yeah.
But behind the retail floor, the back rooms have been transformed into highly efficient, automated last-mile logistics hubs.
Exactly.
The physical neighborhood store is the actual secret weapon of their e-commerce dominance. You need that inventory sitting 5 miles from the customer's front door.
You do.
So the value of a location in dense, rapidly expanding markets like Dallas-Fort Worth is no longer just about foot traffic. It is entirely about supply chain proximity.
Yep. And while the massive anchor boxes handle last-mile logistics, the smaller spaces within these retail centers are being repurposed for pure experiential use.
Experiential, yeah.
Because the necessity of physical presence is the ultimate defense against digital disruption. E-commerce cannot replicate a physical social experience.
Right. The sources are full of this experiential pivot, like Pop Mart.
Oh, yeah.
This massive global collectibles brand. They're aggressively opening physical locations in Southern California malls because collectors want the tactile experience of unboxing.
Right.
Or Chicken and Pickle taking massive retail footprints to create these huge entertainment complexes combining pickleball courts and dining.
Oh, those are so popular right now.
They really are. And in Maryland, a $450 million mixed-use development is currently being co-anchored by a Whole Foods and a massive 30,000-square-foot club studio fitness center.
The synergy of that Maryland development is highly calculated.
Right.
You're pairing the absolute high-frequency necessity of grocery shopping with the sticky routine visitation of a premium fitness club.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
You're engineering a retail center that requires the local consumer base to physically drive there and park their car multiple times a week.
Because you can't download a workout and you cannot stream a pickleball match.
Exactly. This highly defensive experiential retail is aggressively backfilling the vacancies left by the dying middle-tier discretionary stores we discussed in that barbell economy.
So if you are reviewing your real estate strategy today, the core thesis from all of this data is that the commercial market is brutally, unapologetically selective.
It is.
The macroeconomic vice grip is tight, and capital is expensive. You survived this environment by intensely focusing on the ends of the barbell, necessity tenants, discount value, and high-frequency experiences.
Right.
You lean into structurally constrained, high-growth markets like DFW, utilizing local market authorities like Eureka Business Group to uncover that hidden basis.
Absolutely.
And if you are navigating a 1031 exchange, you must maintain absolute underwriting discipline. Do not accept negative leverage just to beat a 45-day clock. Pack a DST as your parachute.
That's right. And, you know, the structural shift in how these properties operate leaves us with a really interesting theoretical question moving forward.
Okay, what's it?
Well, we just outlined how top-tier physical retail spaces, the Walmarts and Targets of the world,
yeah,
how they are increasingly functioning as hyper-efficient, last-mile e-commerce fulfillment centers.
Right, the Trojan horse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The underlying mechanics are heavily reliant on industrial logistics. So the question to monitor is, how long until the institutional market stops pricing these specific properties like traditional retail boxes and starts valuing them at the much more aggressive, lower cap rates of hyper-premium industrial assets?
Wow. That structural repricing would dramatically alter the valuations across the entire sector.
It would change everything.
If the market begins treating a retail box as a last-mile warehouse, the underlying value skyrockets.
Yep.
That is a crucial metric we will definitely track in the data moving forward. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep analyzing the mechanics behind the headlines. And remember, when the macroeconomic environment feels like a vice grip, just make sure you are buying the titanium. We will catch you next time.